Pittsburgh section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. This is Mari Lurie interviewing Dr. Charlotte Shapiro on Take 2, Side 1. The date is September the 1st, 1988. Dr. Shapiro, you and your husband obviously led a very full and meaningful life with your children, a lot of togetherness.
We were very close, yes, yes, we were very close knit.
Once they were adults and left home, how was life for you and your husband?
Well, the house was empty and it was a big home. However, pretty soon they came back and they filled it with grandchildren.
Uh-huh.
We have six grandchildren. And they were happy, happy visitations. But as the children became older, they didn't come as frequently. And therefore, we gave up our home and we moved down here to Chatham Center. And I've been here for 15 years. However, Leo and I had the happy fact of both enjoying traveling, which frankly we did not get to do when the children were young, because our efforts were around the children. However, when they were old enough to go to camp, where they stayed full summers, we started on our travel experiences. And this we did quite extensively, from taking a 9-week course on, actually it was through Temple University, comparative educations. We got into many, many countries, and I studied at that time in England at the University of Exeter, the University of London, went into Munich and studied at the University of München for 3 weeks, studied at the Sorbonne for 3 weeks, and just spent 1 week at the University of Oslo. Leo accompanied me, or I should say I accompanied him. I took it for credit. He took it as an auditor. And together we had a very good time.
So you studied together?
We studied together, yes.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. And what other forms of entertainment did you enjoy together?
We liked the opera, and we always had season tickets, and I still have. We had symphony tickets, and the children, and Leo and I spent time every Sunday afternoon. It was our time to go to the symphony. The Nixon Theater was very popular at that time. It was only the only live theater that we had in Pittsburgh. The Playhouse became popular subsequent to the Nixon, and we would always have season subscriptions for those. Let me see what else. We liked to ice skate, and we did that in the wintertime. We biked in the summertime. Leo was a tennis player. I was not.
Mm-hmm. Were you involved in any Jewish community work at all?
He was always active with Histadrut, which was part of the labor part of Hadassah and Zionist organization, and was active there. As a matter of fact, one of our first trips to Israel was under the auspices of Histadrut. I was active with, well, I've always been a member of Hadassah, and I was active with the Rosh Hashanah Temple. Actually, I was the vice principal of the Sunday school for many years. I taught there also.
Do you remember the date?
Well, I'd have to go back. It must have been in the 40s. The children, let's see, Carol would have been about 6 years old when she started, 6-7 years ago. It is about 1945, 1950, about when I was active at Temple. I'm still in the sisterhood. I still attend some Hebrew classes there as refreshers, that type of thing. But I'm not, I really have never had a, I won't say didn't have enough time. I suppose you have to separate your priorities, and I didn't have the priorities of the activity. Mm-hmm. I am on the roster of organizations, but I am not actively engaged in committee work.
Mm-hmm. Are you affiliated to any synagogue?
Rotashalom.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, we belonged to both B'nai Israel and then after our parents passed away, we found that it was kind of foolish because we really had little in common with people who were there, and mm-hmm. our friends were at the Rotashalom, so we're just members there now.
Going back a little, just in terms of your memory, mm-hmm. you mentioned the crash a little earlier in the text.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to make any comments on that time? Do you remember what life was like in the city?
You mean from a sociological, economic
perspective? Yes. What you personally remember?
Well, let me say, from my point of view, happily, there was not too much hardship. My father was in the position, true enough, that there was a change in the economics. But people did have to eat. And the little stores, we didn't have the big chain stores at that time, did carry on, and many times needed much credit, but they got the credit. And so from an economic point of view, there were four of us at the university at one time in my family, and thank goodness there was no problem. We did not really sustain great hardship. However, in my experience with the family agency, the Jewish Family Welfare Association, mm-hmm. I soon learned that there were many, many people who didn't have what they needed for food and clothing. And for many, many years, the Jewish people were very comfortable. But that crash hit many of our families, too. And there was much, quote, shame in having to apply for public assistance. And that's when the Jewish Family Welfare went into the field of financial aid more than the maladjustment type of things that they were helping people out with. And the immigrants were primarily their interest in the beginning of their organization. They came into being, if I remember correctly, in 1927 as a branch under the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies. And I went to work for them, must have been in 32, 33, first as a student and then as a caseworker. And you see, it was just then when the funds of people were being diminished and they were seeking help.
Mm. Do you remember the days of prohibition?
I can go back to the fact that when they had prohibition and I was on campus, the old speakeasy was the popular place where you had to be known and where you went with people who had contacts or membership cards and would tap on the door to be identified. And of course, they were lovely clubs with beautiful entertainment and nice dancing and that type of thing. But they also served liquors and things that you couldn't get on the street. And gin, of course, was the popular drink then, because nobody could afford much more than that. I didn't sustain too much hardship during prohibition because I wasn't of the drinking age.
Do you have any memories of, or remember hearing your parents talk about World War I?
I remember when the war broke out in 1914. I was only 2-3 years old. Now, I don't know whether I remember or whether I had been told about the fears and the trepidation that parents had. At that time, my family had 3-4 children, and my father was not drafted because of the children in his family. And so my father did not have to serve. However, he served in community service when they were needed for different things. I also remember the armistice. I remember the first armistice that was the false alarm. and the tremendous excitement with people going out in the streets and confetti was being thrown and they were screaming and yelling, their children were coming home. And then it was not so. It was the first false alarm. I don't remember the dates on that, but it was the final armistice of November 11th that was a little more even subdued than the false alarm was. That I recall. I did not know my husband's family at that time. I knew who they were. I knew my mother-in-law, who happened to be a friend of my mother's. But it was at that time that Leo's father went over to Galicia and brought over his family. They had had great hardship over there, and he had made up his mind that despite the fact that things were bad here too, he had to save them. And he brought them over. Now, most of this I knew from hearsay rather than the experience of having known the family.
World War II. Does it have any influence on any particular comments you'd like to make on that?
It had a great influence on me because my husband was supposed to go into service and I was pregnant with a third child. And there was a choice. And he wanted very much to go into the Judge Advocate General's office, and he was invited to do that and to go on to Washington. And I was stricken with emotion because I could not see myself home with two babies and a third one to come. I did know that he would be in a protected environment, but I suppose I was pretty dependent, and help was not available. And so when they passed the requirement that they would not draft people with three children, I was delighted because that third baby was a December 7th, when war was declared, pregnancy. And she was born September 7th, the following year. And Leo did not serve because of that. He was disappointed. I was very pleased.
The Korean War and
Vietnam? Happily, my brothers, who had been in service in the World War, were beyond the age, and they were not involved. I know of people, but I did not have emotional attachment to the horrors, excepting the newspaper publicity and the things that were happening. But it didn't really strike me immediately.
Would you like to comment on the civil rights movement? Were you active in that at all?
Well, I was active in that from the point of view of I was part of the war on poverty that they had when there were a few white women, but most black society went down to presidential hearings, and I was delegated from Pittsburgh to go down, and I was part of that group. I think that was at the end of the 50s, early 60s. I was quite active with the Carver movement. It was a an effort to help black children, and camping societies were set up for them, and there were tutors programmed to teach the slower black child who was having difficulty. I am still on the board of Camp Achievement and the celebration of George Washington Carver. I'm trying to remember what year it was. In the 60s, when I was granted the local award for being the service person in the community who assisted the civil rights movement in basically in behalf of the children, the black children.
Do you remember the year Israel, the birth of the state of Israel?
47, for you.
Were you involved with that in any way, or did it have an impact on your life at all?
Only with some of the horrors that we had heard and the emigration of as many Jews as we could get into the state of Israel. And of course, the blessing was that we now had a homeland. It was something that we heard about for years and years and years, and it never came to pass. So that actually, I was active from the point of view of Hadassah and participating in their programs, but I wasn't a vocal person from the point of view of speech making and that type of thing.
Talking about your career again, mm-hmm. you had a very interesting, varied career really in education, didn't you?
Well, I suppose it's a question of maybe dumb luck that I had enough of a liberal arts program that I met many requirements, and it probably was because I didn't complete my degree immediately. I took my master's degree in 32, 33, and then started on a doctoral program, and then stopped when my first child was born in 39. And for 10 years then, I was home. And during that time, I went back to the university because I thought I would switch my program to economics. And I took economics and psychology at that time because I was going to do a study on women in industry. It was at that time that the labor movement was coming to fore, and Leo was very active in that field. And so I felt it would be smart for me, first because he could help me in gathering statistics and making it possible for me to get to the inside works of the unions, and secondly, because I could do much of it at home. And then when I changed my whole interest to education, I switched again. And so, you see, I had met requirements for almost 3 doctoral programs. However, the university was very decent. They gave me complete reciprocity for all my courses. And many people suffer the problem of having them eliminate courses that are over 10 years or something like that. I did not run into that problem at all. And so at that time I was taking the educational courses because I felt if I was going to work in the field, I had to have the proper credentials. That's what.
So having worked in the field of psychology, psychoanalysis, education, have you noticed significant changes over the years?
Well, there's no question
yes.
that
from
the,
the
self-contained classroom, which was the way most of our programs were held, it switched to the platoon system, where at the middle school, the intermediate classes, the children were sent into specialized programs, and they moved from class to class. Then they went through the junior high school program, where they had the core curriculum. That was centered around a subject, and then the academics met the requirements of the subject matter. And then they went into the middle school concept and gave up the junior high, although there's still some programs of junior highs. And now they have the magnet schools and the specialized performing arts and the very few. I have really and truly, I have studied it from an academic point of view, and I have followed it because I have many, many friends who are still with the Board of Education and still active. But actually, the whole new concept, as Pittsburgh has it, is since my retirement in 77. One very nice thing is that I am a member of the State System of Higher Education, and they have a program now for the Pennsylvania Academy for Teaching, which is going into the small communities and trying to put in these innovations so as to bring them up to more current ideas. And I'm on the advisory committee there, actually because I'm a trustee of one of the state universities.
What is the name of the university?
I'm at the Slippery Rock State University. At that time, I was sort of mixed emotions. I was both a trustee at the Mayview State Hospital and Slippery Rock, and actually, from about 73, when I was appointed to both of those state institutions, I was very active. And I found it was just really too much with all the traveling that I was doing. And so in 85, I resigned from Mayview, but I continued with Slippery Rock. And I've enjoyed it. I'm still active. In fact, last year I was their chairman for the second time. And I'm now a treasurer for the council, which is a state organization of trustees of the 14 Pennsylvania state universities. And it's through that branch that I'm working with the Pennsylvania Academy.
That is your previous job?
Yes. Well, it's just an advisory board, mm-hmm. but I have that because of my activity with the Council of Trustees.
Also, during your career, you must have come across many wonderful people. It has made an impact on you. Any names in particular which you might like to mention?
You mean educators and
yes.
people? Well, people like Sam Kirk and Sam Johnson, who are the outstanding people in the country. Crookshank, they're either the University of Illinois or Syracuse, who were the forerunners of working with mentally retarded children. Mm-hmm. And when I became interested back in 47, 48, these were the men who were the authorities, and these are the people that I sought contacts when I was working with the Council for Exceptional Children. They were quite unusual gentlemen. There was a Dr. Champlin also at Penn State University who had classes at Pitt, and I enjoyed working with him. He was very helpful in kind of directing my thinking when it came to special education. I'm trying to remember what happened at that time, because I was over at the School for the Blind and I was teaching some programs or supervising some workshops that they were having for students, and it was through Dr. Champlin and I got that assignment.
Have covered the whole spectrum.
It really was an interesting background, and as I say, it was just a coincidence.
Fortuitous coincidence that things worked out that way. I had good fortune, and I
mm-hmm.
count my blessings.
Is that how you view your accomplishments?
Yes.
Good fortune?
Yes. I will say I sought them. I think I merited what I did. But I also say that they were good fortune that the opportunities presented themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because so many times people seek things and they just fall asunder. And I had the good fortune that at each step of my life, I can't really and truly think of one very serious, disappointing thing that could have happened along the line. And that is a blessing. And I say it isn't always the person. It's the good fortune.
Mm-hmm. What did you consider your most significant accomplishment?
My family.
That's right.
My family. They are my blessing. And they are the $1 million dividends that my husband left me.
That's wonderful. Work-wise, anything you feel very proud of?
Well, I've always been happy with whatever assignment I had. I was very happy when I left the Allegheny General Hospital. I was invited to consider being the director. And at that time, we decided that there would be a family. We had already been married 9 years, and it was either a family or forget about it. And that was a nice compliment. And incidentally, at that time, there was thought that Allegheny General was anti-Semitic. And people said, a Jewish person will never get in. And I don't remember the name. I remember her last name, but I don't remember her first name. Garvey was her last name. And she worked there for a short time, and something happened, and she wasn't there. And then I think I was the first Jewish person that went into the department there. And I never had that feeling of anti-Semitism at all. They were very receptive, and they were very good as far as I was concerned. I've always had satisfaction with, I would say, my achievement. I went to work originally without certification, only because of my background at the junior high school level. That was Heron Hill. That was primarily black. There were 3 white children out of 1,500. And after 7 years, I met the requirements for credentials, and I was the chairman of the department. And then I was asked to be the girls' advisor and the activities director. And it was shortly after I served in that capacity that Dr. Birch, who was still at the board but later went to the University of Pittsburgh as the director of special education, asked me to join the staff as a psychologist. And I did not have my credentials. I had all the academic work accomplished that met the requirement, but I hadn't taken the requirement of evaluations and projecting programs for children and that kind of thing. And he made it possible for me to get this by assigning evaluations under his supervision after school and on Saturdays and Sundays. And I'm trying to remember, there was 1,500 hours, I think, that I had to get. And then when I had my credentials, I was invited to go into the department as a school psychologist. And as I say, it has always been, I suppose, because I was satisfactory from the point of view of employers. My credentials were satisfactory, my evaluations were adequate, and I moved from that into being a principal. And I retired as a principal.
What year did you retire?
In 77.
In retrospect, is there anything you would have done differently or would have wished had been different, or perhaps you would have liked to have changed?
I don't think. I think I probably would have done the same thing. The only other thing I might have done was I would not have completed my master's degree and I would have gone to law school. That I did not do, and I often thought maybe that was one of my mistakes. But I had so much support in the direction, and I was enjoying what I was doing, that it seemed almost foolish to go into law at that point, and I didn't.
If you look at Pittsburgh today, mm-hmm. and would have contrasted with the Pittsburgh of yesterday, politically, socially, economically, do you think it's changed dramatically?
There's no question. I have to think back, basically even before my time, when I was writing my master's thesis, and I interviewed Mrs. Josiah Cohen. Her name was Carrie Nomberg Cohen. She was a lady. Her husband was a judge in Common Pleas Court here in Allegheny County, and my husband knew Judge Cohen, and when he knew that I was working on my program from historical background, he suggested I call his wife. She was living at the then Shenley Hotel, and she was most gracious. She must have been in her 80s then, in the 30s when I interviewed her. As alert as she could be, she was a musician by profession. She played the piano and was, I understand, much sought after. She just gave me, in one lovely afternoon, beautiful background of Pittsburgh. And it goes back a little bit, and I confirmed a lot of the dates. When there was trouble, pretty much in Germany, back in 1827, the first influx of Jews came in about 33 into Pittsburgh. It was not until about 1843 when the big influx came from Bavaria and Baden and Württemberg. And that's about the time that our really Rote of Scholem had its original inception. Jewish people in Pittsburgh around the time of Civil War, there must have been only about 2,000 people at that time. And most of the services and Jewish people always clung together for two things. First, spiritual religion, and secondly, to help the needy. And it was around the time when these people were coming in from Germany and the problems that the different organizations were set up. And the first one was the Men's Society. It was called the Hebrew Benevolent Society. And shortly thereafter, the women's organization, did they call it Israel Domin Stiftungsverein? It stood for Israel Women's Aid Society. They organized, and they worked as a an auxiliary to the men's groups almost until the end of the Civil War.
What year period was that?
It was about 60, 58, 60, 61, thereabouts, until after the Civil War. They worked closely.